If you would, and we'll begin. Actually, we'll just resume with Canto 10, Chapter 9, the Damodar Lila, verse number 9. And I'll just read the verse, and we'll continue with the commentary. When Lord Sri Krishna saw his mother, stick in hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and began to flee, as if very much afraid. Although yogis tried to capture him as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great austerities and penances, they failed to reach him. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that same personality of Godhead Krishna to be her son, began following Krishna to catch him. And Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary, Krishna saw Yashoda vividly because she held a stick in her hand. It was impossible that she could have a stick to punish him, and he had never seen this before. He looked around to understand the situation and then fled. To fool her, he ran to the main gate of the house where many people gathered near the Yamala Arjun trees. Out by the main gate. I always had the picture that was in their back courtyard, but it's in their front by the main gate, the two trees. Krishna only appeared to be afraid, bhitavat, since he had no real fear internally, because he knew his mother had the greatest affection for him, yet he showed fear like that of others. Bhitavat. This act revealed to his mother the sweetness of his infant pastimes. Knowing that on that day everyone had gone from the main gate, she chased him. Though the mind in samadhi is capable of merging with Brahman or another form of the Lord, and is impelled towards him with concentration, tapasa, the mind alone cannot achieve him. This will be made clear later. And if you remember from this morning, verse 21 gets repeated many, many times and many, many times because it's a summary of the whole section. And it starts, Nayam sukhapo bhagavan. Nayam sukhapo bhagavan. Text 21. Krishna, the son of Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or by those who consider the body the same as the self. Now that's a summary verse saying he's not easy to achieve. But he's more than can be achieved. He can be controlled. He can be punished. He can be scolded by Mother Yashoda. That's how elevated she is. Yashoda pursued him and caught up to him step by step. So much for her good fortune of having him sleep on her lap. Her good fortune of chasing him when he fled cannot be understood at all by the greatest yogis. She had greater fortune than all other devotees because she was able to catch him directly. And there is a short commentary given here by Jiva Goswami in his Krama Sandarbha. Krama Sandarbha is the text. It's the entire Srimad Bhagavatam verse-by-verse commentary. That's what Krama Sandarbha is. So his commentary reads, when Krishna saw his mother stick in hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and began to flee, as if in fear. Yashoda chased him, whom the mind of yogis in samadhi fit to merge in Brahman, or who have merged in Brahman, with minds impelled toward him with great concentration due to austerities inspired by him, cannot attain him. And the last, he went to the door in front to trick his mother. So text 10, so we're reading now 10, 9, 10. This is Damodar Lila, month of Damodar. Shukadeva Goswami says, while following Krishna, Mother Yashoda, her thin waist, overburdened by her heavy breasts, naturally had to reduce her speed. Because of following Krishna very swiftly, her hair became loose, and the flowers in her hair were falling after her. Yet she did not fail to capture her son, Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Yogis cannot capture Krishna by severe penances and austerities. But Mother Yashoda, despite all obstacles, was finally able to catch Krishna without difficulty. This is the difference between a yogi and a bhakta. Yogis cannot enter even the effulgence of Krishna. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadandakoti, from Brahma Samhita. In that effulgence there are millions of universes. But yogis and gyanis cannot enter that effulgence even after many, many years of austerities, whereas bhaktas can capture Krishna simply by love and affection. This is the example shown here by Mother Yashoda. Krishna therefore confirms that if one wants to capture him, one must undertake devotional service. He quotes, Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhaktyamavabhijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvatah tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantaram. Bhaktas enter even the planet of Krishna very easily, but less intelligent yogis and gyanis, by their meditation, remain running after Krishna, even if they enter Krishna's effulgence, they fall down. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, one should not think that just as the yogis cannot catch Krishna, neither could Mother Yashoda. This verse explains. Her hair came undone, and the flowers fell from it behind her, as if following her. From behind, para, she caught him, amrishat. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, writes, though having a very large, heavy body, she quickly caught him. She caught him from behind with great affection, since she was his mother. And one more verse, text 11. Translation reads, when caught by Mother Yashoda, Krishna became more and more afraid and admitted to being an offender. As she looked upon him, she saw that he was crying. His tears mixing with the blank ointment around his eyes, as he rubbed his eyes with his hands. He smeared the ointment all over his face. Mother Yashoda, catching her beautiful son by the hand, mildly began to chastise him, which was what we heard at the very beginning of the chapter. This is what Krishna was waiting for. Although he's crying. Purport. From these dealings between Mother Yashoda and Krishna, we can understand the exalted position of a pure devotee in loving service to the Lord. Yogis, Gyanis, Karmis, and Vedantists cannot approach Krishna. They must remain very, very far away from him and try to enter his bodily effulgence, although this also they are unable to do. Great demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva always worship the Lord by meditation and by service. Even the most powerful Yamaraj fears Krishna. Therefore, we find in the history of Ajamila, Yamaraj instructed his followers not to even approach the devotees, what to speak of capturing them. In other words, Yamaraj also fears Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Yet, this Krishna became so dependent on Mother Yashoda that when she simply showed Krishna the stick in her hand, Krishna admitted to being an offender and began to cry like an ordinary child. Mother Yashoda, of course, did not want to chastise her beloved child very much, and therefore she immediately threw her stick away and simply rebuked Krishna, saying, quote, "Now I shall bind you so that you cannot commit any further offensive activities, nor for the time being can you play with your playmates," unquote. This shows the position of a pure devotee in contrast with others, like Gyanis, yogis, and the followers of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, in regarding the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth. That's Prabhupada's purport. So we've been part of what we're discussing is what makes this pastime so celebrated that for a whole month we honor the pastime? What are the dimensions, or what are the features of this? Here's one. The position attained through pure devotion, the position attained by Mother Yashoda, surpasses all of the most exalted categories of followers of the Vedas. So we'll start down here. This is Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sanatana Goswami. How many living entities are there? They're innumerable. There's a finite number, but too many to count. Unlimited numbers of living entities. And of them, only 400,000 of the 8,400,000 species are in the human category. And of those who are in the human category, most are not following Vedic principles or accepting the divisions of society given by Krishna. Of those that are accepting the divisions of society given by Krishna, very, very few are interested in understanding who they are. And of those who have some understanding of who they are, very, very few are in the category of devotees, like Manushanam Sahasreshu, Kaschid Yatati Siddhaye, from Bhagavad Gita. Yatatamapi Siddhanam Kaschid Vetimam. So, Tatvataha, those that have some understanding of who Krishna is, in fact, are very rare. So it's like it's a pyramid or a triangle going up and up and up and up and up. And of those who are situated in devotion, only they can understand Krishna. And those that are situated in devotion, they're mixed with the modes of nature, and some are unmixed with the modes of nature. Finding those souls that are unmixed, bhakti, most rare. And those who are in that unmixed devotion category, it's so attractive. The sweetness of love that exists in Vrindavan is the most attractive of the pure. And that's what our topic is. It's an elevated topic. And in another place, this is chapter 9. And in chapter 12, just three more chapters later, Shukadeva Goswami speaks the same about the cowherd boys. After describing the exchange that Krishna does every day when he goes out with the cowherd boys, they do this and that and the other thing, their activities together. It's just so pure and so innocent and so filled with affection for one another. We were discussing this. Even when they're wrestling, it's not competitive wrestling, win-lose kind of wrestling. It's just they're having fun. And the person who loses has to carry the winner of the wrestler on his shoulders. And they're just playing. And they're imitating the flying of birds and the jumping of the frogs and the dancing of the peacocks and calling out sounds in the bottom of a well and swinging from trees. And they're just having a blast. And then Shukadeva Goswami says, to come to the position of playing with the personality of Godhead like this, who can say what pious activities they've undergone to achieve that status? Whereas the gyanis, same as what we just heard, whereas the gyanis, cultivators of empiric knowledge, their happiness is entering into Brahma-sukh, the happiness of merging with Brahman. Krishna is the source of that. Their happiness is entering into Brahma-sukh. The devotees, dasya bhakta, pure devotees, they see the Lord as their master, worshipable, supreme. The materialists just see Krishna as an ordinary person. But these boys, they're playing with him all day long. Then he circles around and says, The yogis, many, many lifetimes, very severe austerities to fix their mind on the Paramatma. They're unable to even touch a particle of dust from the feet of the Supreme Lord, he who is in constant association all the time with the residents of Vrindavan. How exalted are all these residents of Vrindavan? That's the message we hear in the Bhagavatam. Along with describing the activities that these devotees are engaged in with Krishna, and Krishna's engaged with them, he enjoys the scolding of Mother Jasoda. What child enjoys scolding? He arranged it by his own internal potency so he could be scolded. He enjoys the feelings of fearfulness, knowing at the same time the stick that's in her hand, it's a little tiny little stick, it's not like a whack, little just a tiny lati, little tiny stick. But he's afraid. And she is holding it so that he'll be afraid, and he becomes afraid. So he throws it away. When she doesn't want to see him cry. But specifically, the interest is so he doesn't go on stealing. Because the previous chapter, she got all these reports about his stealing. And mothers don't want to allow their child to steal. She has such affection, she can't just like, let him go on stealing. He grows up and he becomes a thief. She can't have that. Mothers can't have that in their child. So what to do? So she does different things. So he won't go, he'll learn his lesson. He won't go stealing anymore. Because she hasn't really asserted herself like this. And he wanted her. He wanted that kind of affection from her. He wanted to be controlled by her. He who is the controller of everyone wanted to be controlled by Mother Yasoda. So this is the charm, or the mystery, or the sweetness of Krishna's childhood pastimes. Mother Yasoda is a really important personality in his childhood pastimes. And his pastimes in Braja, we hear again and again from the Bhagavatam itself, that he remained in Braja only for 11 years, 8 months. And how celebrated are those 11 years and 8 months? Because he lived, or his pastimes continued on earth, until he was 125. We hear about those other pastimes, but they're not the same as what we hear about his Braja Leela. And so what's so special about the Braja Leela anyways? That's what we're discussing. There's a very special intimacy that's the most pleasing of all to Krishna, more pleasing than the prayers of the personified Vedas glorifying him to no end, or brahmanas chanting hymns and mantras, or the sacrificial performers, swaha, or the meditators doing their meditation and austerities to please him, etc., etc. The scholars that study the Vedas day and night. It doesn't please him the same. I mean, it's Vedic. All those things are Vedic practices, recommended, prescribed activities. But it doesn't hold the same attraction or for Krishna. Or say, the mature stage of all those activities is to come to the position of loving service, the pinnacle of which is found in Vrindavan. So it's a celebrated, so celebrated that we observe it for the whole month, because it's focusing us again and again on the exalted nature of the love of the residents in Vrindavan, and amongst them, Mother Yasoda. Now, Nanda Maharaj is honored too, but not nearly as much as Mother Yasoda. When the question comes up for people that are influenced by modern thinking of equality and women's rights and all that stuff, Mother Yasoda is honored more than her husband. She's a model Vedic wife and mother, and she's not like, I want to have equal position with my husband. That's not Yasoda. But she's exalted, she's honored even more. She's honored even more. She's with him all day long. Well, when he's little, Nanda's doing with the cows, and she's with Krishna. And Balaram is with Rohini. So they're very intimately experiencing parental affection with Krishna's childhood stage. That same intimacy doesn't exist when he goes to Mathura, what to speak of, goes to Dwarka. Now, when he goes to Dwarka, he has queens, and with queens he has 10 sons, and those sons have their sons, and so he has a big family. And certainly it's not detailed in the same way as his Braja Leela. There must be intimacy in his dealings with his wife, children, grandchildren in Dwarka. But there's a majesty that goes along with what he does in Dwarka that doesn't have the same mood in Vrindavan. The sweetness mood of Vrindavan prevails. She has had the opportunity from the previous chapter, for example, she had the opportunity of seeing the entire universe in Krishna's mouth. We read it just the other day. What she saw looking inside Krishna's mouth, that she saw everything. But she's not thinking, oh, he must be something special. Her affection as a mother was so strong. Yogamaya pulled the curtain back again, and she couldn't see him anything other than her darling little Gopal. Her affection was so strong. Rather, those exhibitions of majesty or opulence serve as an impetus or a stimulation for her ecstatic love as a mother. It's just the nature of Braja Prem. So we're getting a really close-up picture in this chapter 9 of Mother Yashoda and her exalted love, as we will in chapter 12 about the cowherd boys, and then what to speak about later chapters with the young gopis. Very special. Very special loving exchanges in Vrindavan. So let's see if we have some discussion with Damodar Leela. Do we have a microphone? There it is. Any comments or questions from anybody? She already cleaned it. We're having this system of, yeah. Our host or hostess, anything you would like to discuss on this topic or any Krishna conscious topic? No? Okay. Anybody else here? Okay. We're missing Radha. She's having too much fun upstairs. Your wife has.
So Maharaj, after Mother Yashoda's pastime of binding him, did Krishna stop stealing butter? Or?
Of course not. He was giving happiness to the Brijbasis by doing that. That's why he was doing that.
And this was part two of the question I asked yesterday online. You answered that I was asking Mother Yashoda is angry or not, and you said no, she's not angry, she's just disciplining him. But what, like, by afternoon the pastime got over by afternoon, as you were mentioning yesterday. So what changed? Like, what pleased her that everything came back to normal?
Mood of love. The nature of bhakti rasa is the waves move this way and then they subside, or the waves move that way. It's just, one is just being moved by the waves of ecstatic love. Different bhava, this one, that one. Even like for a very nice example, two really nice examples, is one is with Mother Yashoda, how she processes seeing what's in Krishna's mouth. She goes from one mood to the next mood, to the next mood, to the next mood. And it's just this ecstasy, that ecstasy, the other ecstasy. She's just being moved by ecstasy. Krishna's at the center, But there's varieties of ecstasy. That's Mother Jasoda's life experience. So what moves her is different ecstasies, rising and then falling in another one, rising. And we spent a lot of time just before coming here to Boston discussing chapter 38, which is Akura's journey from Vrindavan to, from Mathura to Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami's commentary is really beautiful. He is very specific about this is the particular Sanchari Bhav that is moving in Akura's heart. So he expresses this, that Bhav subsides, another Sanchari Bhav rises, and he's expressing this. He's feeling and expressing. And then the next, and then the next. So what moves Mother Jasoda from one mood to the next mood is the ecstasies of love of God, that are the interactions with Krishna and his internal potencies. She's just immersed. She's helplessly like a piece of wood on the ocean being tossed by the waves.
Another question. Is there any description of how she felt when Krishna left? I have heard more about gopis' feeling of separation, but what happened to...
Well, a nice place to go to look is when Uddhava comes. So it's shortly after Krishna reaches Vrindavan, as far as chapters are concerned. And the first place he goes is to the home of Nanda and Jasoda, because he's respecting the king and queen. And, you know, you can find out how she felt there. That's one place. You know, she felt motherly feelings. She's feeling intense separation from her son. And Nanda tries to pacify her. Nanda has his feelings, but he also has his fatherly role or husband role. And he trusts that Krishna will keep his word and he'll come, because Krishna gave his word. You know, that doesn't calm her heart completely, but the calmness of her husband helps calm her heart to some degree. So that's the place you can look. Chapter 45, I think. 45, 46, something like that. Okay, online.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Let me ask something before. When Krishna was chastised by Mother Yashoda, you mentioned that it was because of the prior stealing that he had done, not so much in the context of the Damodar Leela that he was distributing the butter, because it was in his...
No,
own home.
I didn't say that.
Okay, maybe I misheard then.
I didn't say that.
Okay, because
he wanted, and she instead of scolding him earlier, chapter 8, she just embraced him and said, you know, why do you do these things?
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't good enough. He wanted, so she she scolded him because he wanted her to scold him. Wasn't because of the prior. It was connected to, I can't let him steal. So she took a different approach instead of embracing him or cuddling him or smiling. And why do you do these things?
Because it was in his own home, and that was considered as stealing, right? Because the distribution of butter that he was doing, it was...
The other was with his... Yeah, you use your rational faculty and it doesn't work.
Okay.
It was his own, it was Mother Jasoda's butter.
Okay.
So he's not stealing. It's all his butter. He's not stealing.
Mm-hmm.
He is inspiring loving exchange. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even after he's inspiring loving, whatever inspires loving exchange, he has a license.
Okay. One question online from Rupa Vilas Prabhu.
Keep going. Go ahead, Rupa Vilas Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. How old was Krishna in Damodar Leela? Did Krishna steal butter after he started going out to forest for grazing calves?
No. It was before 3 years, 4 months. So like 3 years or three years and a couple of months. Because shortly after is when they moved from Gokul. So around three plus a little bit. And no, he didn't steal because he was able to take from directly from the cows. He would drink milk directly from the cows.
Okay. Next question is from Vidya Mataji. Oh, this is...
What?
This is... Okay. For us to follow in the footsteps of Mother Yashoda, what are some elements of sadhana and outlook of the heart or mind which will help us to enhance our latent loving feelings for Krishna?
Well, the first thing is, before you think of following Mother Yashoda, is come to the Brahma-Buddha stage. That's first. And the Brahma-Buddha stage is to know who you are. Now, you don't have to like, it's not a bucket, but that's where your concentration should go. To get to that stage where you can be a follower of Mother Yashoda, really focus your attention purposely to come to that, to become eligible for that kind of contemplation or Raghunuga Bhakti. Come to the stage of Brahma-Buddha. In practical terms, not just theoretical terms. There's a question right behind you.
She's just continuing by saying that this is particularly when we sometimes feel that we have heard the pastimes many times. So one may feel like I have heard this pastime so many times.
Well, did you? there's degrees of hearing. And if one is hearing what we heard the Bhagavatam say, as persons who are genuinely hearing, it's ever fresh. Not that the feeling is not, oh, I've heard this one. That's when you're really hearing. It's ever fresh, newer and newer.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So this is a unrelated question.
Unrelated, okay.
So there are many different universes in this material world, and many other Brahmas and Shivas. Is there also like a differentiation in the Krishna's pastimes? Like, is there a different Srimad Bhagavatam that's different from ours?
I'll send a text message to Vyasadeva and ask him that. See if he responds, but he may be busy writing another Srimad Bhagavatam. what is said is Mahabharata has, and Srimad Bhagavatam both, in the heavenly planets, they're much larger. I forget the number, 1 billion verses or something like that. You know, some really big number. So it's expandable. That's about all that I know. You know, the glories of the personality of God is no limit, but the what we have, the 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, is what we've been given by Vyas, and there are larger numbers in the heavenly planets. But you know, beyond that, I don't have anything other than what I just said.
Thank you, Maharaj. Right.
Behind you? Okay. Over here, we'll try again. Yes, something? Anything? No? Okay. Anything online? If not, we'll have our Bhagavatam installation. You have something. You're contemplating something.
I'm just thinking something else about. Time for that.
Go ahead. There's time.
It's completely unrelated topic, but when I was looking at the food in the mode of passion, food in the mode of ignorance, and food in the mode of goodness, generally, if you look at the Sanskrit, the ati or the too much is only attached to the spiciness, but then there are other items like salt and pungent and other qualities that are mentioned there. That's not prefixed with too much, although in the translation it is saying so. So when I read that, it seems like our food is actually in the mode of passion. Even when the food is vegetarian, if you just go by the qualities that Krishna is mentioning there, I wanted to double check on that. That is it because we are offering the food to Krishna, that's our saving grace. Otherwise, at least because of the nature of spices that we are used to using, it's pungent, spicy. Even when we are adding salt, it gets into the mode of passion.
No.
At least as far as the verse is saying. That's why I wanted to double check if you have encountered
any. I think you're reading too much into what's, you know, the literal translation. I mean, something that I've come across with the Bhagavatam commentary by our acharyas is, while a certain adjective is used in relation to one or two things, they say it should be understood this extends to all the things. So if it's too much, then it's too much.
Correct.
So say spices that are bitter, or spices that are pungent, or spices that are this. It's for variety's sake, maybe also for some additional sake, medicinal sake. Mm-hmm. But too much is not, that's passion. So too much, salt doesn't mean passion. Too much is too much. So I'd have to, I mean, I don't want to take a look, but to get a more refined answer to your question, I'd have to look at the Sanskrit to see, you know, precisely the inference that you're drawing, that all the foods that we take are in the mode of passion because for Prabhupada extending too much may be exactly what he should be doing, mm-hmm. not just, you know, the license of our acharya that wants to, you know, whitewash how we eat, mm-hmm. or the predecessor Vaishnavas would eat. It's not that if you eat foods without salt, that's goodness, and you take some salt and that's passion. That's not right. So too much applies across the board. Now, there may be some Sanskrit rule, or there may be just, you know, the realization of the Acharya himself that understands this adjective applies to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or adverb. Okay. Okay, it's RT time.
Thank you.